This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. On our last episode, Ruby was relieved when Douglas turned up to look in on Frank. With two patients to look after, Ruby begged him to stay. After their fish and chip supper, Ruby glanced at the newspaper wrapping and saw a grisly report of a Freeman's Bay murder. The victim was her friend and former lover, Angel. Ruby is reminded of the horrors of her former life.
Frank had settled himself into his wicker chair, a silly smile on his face as he watched Douglas's Buster Keaton-like efforts at beating clouds of dust out of a fireside rug with a broom handle. Ruby could hardly bear seeing his bumbling efforts to help, so she busied herself in the kitchen. Frank's hands trembled as she handed him a cup of tea. He'd surprised her by agreeing to a visit from Janice.
"I've told you, Ruby," he said. "This is your house too. So long as you don't have 50 people to a raucous party, or expect royalty to come for tea, I don't care who you ask around. Besides, it's time this place got some life back into it."
"Oh, good. Thanks," she said.
"I must say," Frank said, with his mischievous grin, as Douglas carried the rugs into the house. "As heroic an effort as you put in, Dougie dear, and entertaining though it was, I'm not sure why you didn't just use Mother's Hoover. There's an old carpet sweeper there too somewhere."
"A Hoover? Oh, you might have said," said Douglas, puffing.
"Frank!" Ruby shook her head reprovingly, suppressing a smile.
"I can't help it."
Frank's weak laugh dissolved in a cough, and he thumped his chest with his fist.
"Ugh, I'm so short of gags, I'm desperate. I don't see that I have to go on being the butt of your humour," Douglas pouted. "You've only got an audience of one, and I rather think she's unlikely to applaud."
"Ah, you're too harsh, darling." Frank's shoulders quaked with mirth. "Quite right, Douglas," said Ruby. "It's poor of you, Frank."
"Sorry, Mummy," Frank winked at her, showing no remorse.
Disgruntled, Douglas used his pocket knife to open a bottle of fizz and sat on the step with his back turned, glugging straight from the bottle, like a navvy, and without offering any to Frank. "So, where is this Hoover?" Ruby put her hands on her hips. The whole place could do with a good going over.
"Right here, in the cupboard behind this chair," Frank said with an overacted show of innocence, followed by a giggle. "Dash it all, Frank," Douglas barked. "You're being downright bloody."
"Oh, please, please don't get the pip with me, darling." Frank suddenly seemed even paler. He reached forward, touching Douglas's shoulder.
"You do me good, Dougie. You are my tonic, you know, only you."
Douglas got to his feet and bent to kiss him. Dr. Bradshaw packed his stethoscope away and clipped his bag shut.
"I meant to call in yesterday, Mrs. Barton. Tricky breach took up most of the day."
"It was good of you to come on a Saturday," said Ruby.
"I had to look in on Mr. Pierce, Two birds and all that, he said. Now, that young lady of yours should be right as rain by the end of the week.
What would Madame say about that?
But you must make sure she stays in bed. I cannot stress it enough. The danger is not over. It's when they start feeling a bit better and they think they can run about, things can take a nasty turn. Bed rest.
Ruby exhaled.
And you? He peered into Ruby's face. You look at the end of your tether. I can give you something to help you get a decent night's sleep, hmm?
He sounded like a cheap peddler.
The idea of being doped up appalled her. Trapped in sleep. Helpless.
No, thank you, Doctor.
A little more rest wouldn't do you any harm at all. I've left a prescription for you.
She opened the front door for him. I'll be all right, she said.
The chemist will give you a repeat for that tonic. See you take it.
Drizzle began to drift from the colourless sky as Madame's red car pulled into the curb behind the doctor's old sedan. I will. Can I ask you about Frank?
He's determined to get up today. He won't listen to my advice. You know I can't tell you anything. But as you're his housekeeper, I can only suggest you keep an eye on him.
Dr. Bradshaw opened his umbrella and watched Madame secure the canvas cover over the driver's seat of the MG.
A visitor, I see. Well, good day, Mrs. Barton.
He gave a deferential nod as he passed Madame on the path. Madame sat on the edge of Edie's bed.
My dear Edith, I would have come yesterday.
She stroked Edie's forehead.
You're very busy at Vado, said Edie. I'm sorry I'm sick.
My dear, Madame cried.
Ruby watched from the doorway, certain that Madame's quick eyes would have taken the room in. Ruby's hastily pulled up bed covers, Edie's nearly finished red coat hanging on the wardrobe door, the view into the untidy sunroom with the ironing board clamped to the sewing table, and the half-sewn green mohair coat in a heap on the chair. The pile of fabric, pulled out of the cupboard, which had been left on the floor. For the first time, Ruby noticed that a seam of wallpaper near the ceiling was coming unstuck. She must ask Frank for the ladder. A little flour and water paste should fix that. Madame reached into a bag at her feet and handed Edie a parcel tied with blue satin ribbon.
Yesterday, I did get a little something before the shops closed.
Oh, thanks, madam,
Edie said hoarsely. Madame pulled at the ribbon and peeled away the wrapping paper.
Colouring pencils,
Edie squeaked.
Look, mum.
And you will need this,
Madame said, unwrapping a sketchbook.
Isn't it the best thing, mum?
It is. The best thing. It's so kind of you, Ruby said to Madame. Thank you.
Now, Edith.
Madame got to her feet and tucked the bedclothes over Edie's chest.
Your mamma and I will go into another room to talk.
Would you like a cup of tea?
Tea? Yes. I'll come to the kitchen.
Madame arced her arm grandly towards the far end of the passageway, as though the house were her own. Douglas, who appeared to have been cowering at the kitchen table, shot to his feet. Douglas, you haven't met Madame. He shuffled awkwardly.
Nice to meet you, he said. Just popped in for a... I'll see you later, Frank.
Is that how frightened he was? Madame had the grace not to watch his exit. He hadn't even taken his hat. Frank, pale as putty but freshly shaved, fully clothed, with a cravat tucked into the neck of his shirt and an argyle jumper over the top, shook as he rose from his chair, grinning amiably when he saw the elegant visitor. They'd been drinking tea, and the tin of ginger crunch Ruby had made was open.
"How do you do?" he said, without waiting for introductions. "Frank Pierce."
"Pleased to meet you, Mr. Pierce."
Madam extended a hand, allowing him to lift her hand to his lips.
"Shiponya Hoja."
It was the first time Ruby had heard Madam speak her full name. It sounded exotic.
"Mrs. Hoja?"
Frank blunted the name when he repeated it.
"Albanian?"
"Hoja is a common name.
You know my former homeland?" "We ran across a couple of your chaps in Italy," he said dryly. "Partisans."
One emphatic syllable came from Madame Hoja.
"Ah."
Ruby could not read what passed between them in the silence that followed as they studied one another. She hastily removed her apron, one that had belonged to the late Mrs. Pierce, and shoved it in a drawer, and arranged fingers of ginger crunch on one of Mrs. Pierce's nicest plates.
"You must be here to see my housekeeper," Frank said with some grandiosity. "Ruby, you should have shown your guest into the parlour."
"No, no," Madam protested with a wave of her hand. "I like kitchens. It is the heart of a place."
The teapot still had the remnants of tea in it. Ruby went to empty it over a weedy garden patch where rank parsley had gone to seed. When she returned, Frank and her employer had their heads together in conversation. She set her teeth and made the tea, while Frank used his charm and Madam responded politely with equal charm. The scene was ridiculous, and it annoyed her. What would he do in her shoes? What would Madame Hoja do? "Please, that's enough, you can leave now." Except that this was his house, and he could do as he liked.
"Very nice to have met you," Frank was saying. "I'll leave you to your tea. I have reading to catch up on. You won't mind if I play a record, will you?"
Madame Hoja sat upright on the edge of the chair, accepting a slice of lemon in her cup of black tea. A piano concerto filled the few minutes' silence before one of them spoke.
"Not a well man."
Although Chopin masked their conversation, Madame kept her voice low.
"I have seen such things. Many of us carry scars."
Ruby withered. Scars and stains. The poison of her guilt about Angel was on her skin like a pox. She dropped her eyes. "Edie's getting better," she said.
"Yes, I had a report from Janice."
"That was the doctor when you came. He said she has to stay in bed next week."
"I see. So."
Madam waved the teapot away when it was offered. Ruby didn't want more either, but she topped up her own cup and nervously waited for Madame Hoja to continue.
"I came to tell you I made a mistake," said Madam. "I was wrong. You will work to 4:30, as before. After school, Edie may come to the workroom, as before. End her schoolwork. Perhaps I can find something for her to do. A job."
"I'm not sacked." Madame Hoja's face beamed youthfully.
"Would I dismiss the most talented worker I have? My dear, I have affection for you and Edith. I ask you to forgive me."
"Forgive you?"
"I saw you in the rain that day. I went back for you, but you were gone."
Ruby carried the cups to the sink and tipped the plate of ginger crunch back into the tin. When she turned, Madam's eyes were on her.
"It's all right, Madam," Of course you are forgiven, Ruby said.
Madame Hodger pulled her into an embrace and planted a kiss on each cheek.
So, it is forgotten.
Madame released her with a broad smile.
Now, my dear, I must go.
She took an envelope out of her purse and pressed it into Ruby's hand.
Please, this is for Edith.
No, there's no need.
Yes, you must take it.
Open it when I am gone.
Ruby waved from the veranda as Madame drove away. When she peeked inside the envelope, she saw 5-pound notes folded together. Enough to buy Edie a new pair of shoes and plenty left over. Edie had fallen asleep clutching the sketchbook to her stomach. The rain had stopped, and the mottled sky matched a phrase of music from Frank's gramophone. Douglas returned in time for dinner, bringing more fizz, a wooden box of fresh Granny Smith apples from an orchardist he knew, and an apology. During the week of Edie's enforced convalescence, Frank sat at her bedside reading poems and stories, making voices and dramatizing passages. The rest of the time he slept, or moped. Pined, Ruby thought, for Douglas, who'd returned to work and taken his brushware on the last round of the back block farms before the bad weather set in. Between preparing meals and cleaning, Ruby administered medicine, finished lining the remodeled mohair coat, and started making a matching cap out of scraps. By Sunday, she'd given up ordering Edie back to bed. Edie was her old self, eager to be allowed into the kitchen to help make peanut brownies.
Looking forward to school tomorrow, Tink?
Frank put a fingerful of beaten butter and sugar into his mouth.
I'll say, Edie said. I've missed 2 lots of social studies. Mum, can I take my colouring pencils to school?
Better not, said Ruby. Your friends might get jealous.
Frank!
Edie's voice had a sing-song note.
What does live truly mean?
Where's this from? Said Frank.
It's the school motto, Edie frowned. I didn't ask the teacher about it. She'd think I was stupid.
Hurry up with those peanuts, chicken, Ruby said. Give her a hand, Frank, or we'll be having plain cocoa biscuits. Frank popped a peanut into his mouth and gave Edie a wink. Ruby banged the baking powder tin on the table.
It could mean not to tell lies.
Edie's mouth twisted to one side.
Then it should be speak truly, and sometimes that's hard.
Is that so, Tink?
Frank's face crinkled. Edie frowned thoughtfully.
I reckon live truly is a very queer thing for a school motto, if a kid can't work out what it means.
I think, said Frank, it might mean don't do anything you're going to regret. What do you say, Ruby?
Ruby turned her back, pretending to look at the temperature gauge on the oven.
Well, it's just peculiar. That's all I can say, declared Edie. These peanuts are skinned.
Ruby looked forward to being back at Valdo, work and seeing Janice. She hummed a tune as she made lunches of cold mutton sandwiches for 4. She laughed at herself. Domesticated women in magazines did that sort of thing, flouncing around the kitchen, pleasing everybody, getting everything ready for Monday morning. She took off the apron and adjusted the neck of the boat-necked blouse she'd made the night before, darted to fit, accentuating the contour to her waist. In one of Mrs. Pierce's drawers, she'd found a piece of brown paper and a length of ribbon, enough to wrap the blouse she'd made for Janice. Her head filled with other things she could sew, and interesting projects to start. Anything that kept at bay the harrowing memories. Angel. Oh, Angel. and the thoughts that threatened to claw at her. Still, during the week that she'd been looking after Edie, she'd begun to feel she had a home, for however long it lasted. Everywhere she looked, there were areas in the house she could improve, if Frank would let her. Having too much to do and thinking up more brought her close to happiness. When the weather was warmer, she could even tackle Mrs. Pierce's garden. Frank's lunch was ready for him in the fridge, so he didn't have to bother. Packed sandwiches and peanut brownies for Douglas, Edie, and herself. Peanut brownies for Janice, and a tin full left on the table for Frank. They wouldn't last long. Her frenzied housework had resulted in a cleaner house than when she'd first seen it. She was almost satisfied.
My word.
Douglas's face lit up when he saw Ruby and Edie.
You approve? Ruby crowed. She felt pleased with the remodeled mohair coat and Edie's cheery red.
I'll say. Aren't they a picture, Frank? Straight out of one of those magazines. Where's your camera, dear?
Edie twirled, holding up the sides of her new coat.
You shouldn't show off like that, Ruby chided.
Leaning in the doorway, Frank chortled.
You listen to your mother, Tink. Wait till you're on the stage.
I can't be late on my first day back, said Ruby.
As they hurried down the path, they heard Frank singing.
Don't put your daughter on the stage, Mrs. Worthington. Don't put your daughter on the stage.
He's in good form this morning, isn't he? Ruby said, as they got into the car.
I do wish you'd known him before, said Douglas glumly. He's not the same, you know. He's never going to be.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.